Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. Today, we're talking broker excellence, why it matters to the future of healthcare. Our guest is Dr. Darwin Hale, founder and CEO of Advocate Health Advisors, which is a veteran-owned national FMO that he's led for more than 20 years with doctoral research focused on broker quality and Medicare Advantage. We'll explore why brokers and FMOs create real value when they enter the value stream early, educating beneficiaries, setting expectations, unlocking benefits, and improving outcomes for members and health plans alike. Well, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
So we always like to start with, you know, how people ended up doing what they're doing, and you've had a really fascinating personal journey and leadership. Would you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, you know, my early days, I was a technologist with IBM, and out of college, I had done some healthcare research as a staff assistant for a senator, Florida senator. I'm born and raised in Florida. And so, you know, you kind of don't know in the early days where your paths are lying, but eventually I became the healthcare director for AT&T and the general manager over a lot of Fortune 500 accounts. And so I really got a chance to study the industry in a way that's unique. Wrote the strategy and eventually started my own business because I saw in 2005 what was happening. And that kind of led me to where I am now. And I had my own personal observations along the way where, you know, my own mother turned 65 and there I was, Mr. Corporate Guy, and had an MBA, feeling pretty good, you know, major in the Army Reserves, and I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. So I saw a need then and later went after it.
So, you know, what inspired you to start the company and how did your personal journey shape all of that?
Well, yeah, so, you know, I kind of gave you some of the background there, but what ultimately happened is I called a friend from the military who I had deployed with and trusted, and he knew insurance cold. And so we sat down with my mom at the kitchen table and sorted it out. And I felt pretty good, you know, that it was good advice and that he had her best interests at heart. And when I went away, I got deployed, you know, as you do from time to time. And when I came back, she was in another plan that was, I would call it bad insurance, right? It wasn't suitable. You know, it was kind of a hit and run job. And so, you know, I couldn't really find the person who did it when I called the carrier. They weren't there and so on and so forth. And so that made me think, wow, with my resources and friends, you know, I could barely pull it together. What about people that didn't have that? And that's when I thought there was an opportunity. And so as I retired from the military and other things, I thought I would like to provide that to other people, you know, a friend, right? A trusted friend with local knowledge. And that was the beginning of Advocate.
I know that one of the things that you guys work on a lot is educating beneficiaries, guiding them through their choices. But you talk about personal localized connections. Why are those so critical to seniors in helping them navigate Medicare Advantage plans? And how do you ensure that they feel empowered rather than overwhelmed?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everybody feels overwhelmed when you start getting buckets full of mail and the commercials start. So I think that our opportunity is to be the trusted resource so that stimulus, you know, is a compelling event. And hopefully there will be a local broker that is worth their salt that people can go to. And so I think it's a two-part equation. One is, you simply need to be known in your community. So there's lots of communities in the country where they call them the Medicare man, the Medicare lady. Sometimes they know their name, but generally there's a go-to person. And that's obviously built on the goings-on that have happened over the last many years. And then there's the technical expertise. You know, it's actually quite involved to understand. And so the way that they cannot feel overwhelmed is to be able to just spend enough time with someone, hopefully face-to-face, not always, and just let that person analyze them. And the top brokers do two things. You know, number one, they actively build trust and rapport. So when they're in the home, there's a lot of, you know, sort of tacit knowledge, right? You don't sit in the wrong chair. You don't sit until you're invited. You know, they take in information in the environment. They observe the person just to make sure they're comfortable. And when it's time to start talking, you know, there's some small talk and some other things that you do that really are actually part of the profession that, you know, instinctively some people do and some people don't. And then once you get into the benefits, obviously, it's a lot of work after that.
I find that the folks who don't do that kind of preliminary stuff typically have skinny kids. But, you know, you learn over time, right? And that's how we all learned. You fall, you bloody your nose a little bit, and you get in the car and go home and say, well, okay, I got to change my approach. I know you talk a lot about advocacy. Tell us how you define the difference between advocacy and sales.
Yeah. Well, you know, so I'm a product of the season Xerox and IBM and ran the sales and marketing skills training for the division of IBM that I worked for. And really, to me, it's just professional sales or consultative sales versus selling. We used to use the analogy, you know, if you learn martial arts or something, you know, you can use your power for good or you can use your power for bad. And so there's some inherent ability to influence people that salespeople generally have an ability that's above average, and they can hone that, of course. But really what makes you professional in number one is you can choose the company you work for, right? So my first sales job, I said, hey, how do you not feel bad about, you know, pressuring somebody to do something? And he said, oh, no. He goes, I don't pressure anybody. He said, first of all, I picked the company that I work for because I think they have the best product. And he said, second, he goes, I feel sad if someone doesn't take my product because, in this case, it was cellular phones. He said, I've already thought out how they need that, why they need that, and how their lives will be better. He said, so if I don't make a sale, he said, I feel bad because I think I didn't communicate well. And I didn't understand them. And so, by the way, I can't hear that. So the idea is that when you're a professional salesperson or an advocate, you're really trying to understand the person's, you know, particular needs. And there's only a few things that really resonate. So it might be in 300 pages of a coverage document and a 30-page summary. Go figure, right? How can a summary be 30 pages? But if a summary of benefits is 30 pages, there's only a handful of things that really primarily matter. And a professional or an advocate looks at your needs and your life situation. It's not just medical. It's not just financial. It could be social. You know, there's all sorts of different factors that go into the needs analysis and to the goodness of fit. So professional folks in my research, they spend the time and they do a good job of matching, and they're available to ongoing. The quote unquote salesperson in this way, you know, in a negative light, they're just trying to conduct a transaction. They're not an advocate for the individual. They're an advocate for themselves. And what they want to do is they want to get in there, make the sale, and get out as soon as they possibly can, never to be seen again, which ironically is not in their best interest, and it's not in anybody else's best interest either, but somehow it continues to be a thing for a small percentage of the brokers.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, we don't realize sometimes until it's a little bit later in the career that it's a relationship business, and it's not about product, and it's not about any of that kind of stuff. It's about becoming a trusted advisor. So with that in mind, you know, community brokers, as you call them, are on the front line every single day. What makes a truly trusted broker effective? And let's talk a little bit more about relationships and how they improve beneficiaries' experience and care under the plans.
Yeah, well, that's good, because I think, first of all, the nature of a Medicare Advantage enrollment is got a technical part, right? It's complicated from the idea that you need to know pharmaceutical benefits. You got to know things outside of the plan's benefit structure, community, state pharmaceutical, get them into Medicaid. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff outside of that. But within the plan, you have to understand, you know, durable medical equipment. You have to understand not just the chronic conditions, but you have to understand the different drug groups that may go with it. And then you got to know the tiers of the formularies, which vary. And then you actually have to know what retail outlet, you know, Walmart, CVS, like there's different ways to source it. So, you know, and that goes on and on, right? So it's a lot more than the premium and the copay. So the technical skills they need are huge. But beyond that, you know, there's a local knowledge of providers. You got to understand primary care doctors, and not just maybe the doctor, but how about the front office? You know, can they get in? Are they being treated well? So that local knowledge and those technical skills is a huge part. But I think perhaps even more important is the fact that you know, people don't really, it's more like tax time where you go, here's my box of, you know, things, tell me what to do. So I think a lot of seniors in particular, which is about 90% of our market, you know, they decide if you're worth your salt. They decide, I think, can they trust you or can they not? And then they're going to really put a lot of credibility into what you have to say. But they're looking at you to just determine, and they get surprisingly good at sort of pattern recognition and profiles. And sadly, many still get tricked, you know, from some of the aggressive marketing out there. But generally, they want to know if they can trust you, and then they've got the expertise, and then they're available. And the last thing I would just say on that topic is that I think once all this AI hype, you know, not hype, but, you know, as we realize what AI can do and what it can't do, I think we're going to come back down to human behavior is complicated. Trust takes a village to raise a child, right? So you got a network of people that you trust. They're going to be able to help influence you to be your best self. And even without AI today, everybody I know, myself included, I wish I could use a couple of few pounds. I could probably not have that third glass of wine on Saturday night. So there's already things that people know that they shouldn't do that they do. And I think a trusted relationship will sift through that noise of the data and maybe help you just be a little better.
That's all fair. Question for you. There's an ongoing national conversation, and there's been a lot of chatter in Washington, as there always is, about Medicare Advantage plans and seniors' health coverage. From where you sit, why should policymakers and stakeholders continue to support Medicare Advantage plans?
Wow. Well, I mean, Medicare Advantage is one of the best things that's happened to our society in a long time. And, you know, they leverage prevention to beat cure. They take satisfaction. I think Medicare Advantage is the best of both worlds. First of all, despite the critics, right, and all the stuff you hear that's silly, number one, you've got the strength and dependability of the federal government, which is what they do well. And you've got the innovation and high levels of satisfaction that private companies do well. So business, government, and society are aligned. You get more wellness out of each dollar when you focus on the non-clinical factors like nutrition, transportation, getting a gym membership, some sort of social connection. There's a lot of non-clinical things that drive outcomes. 300,000 people, perhaps, you know, medical errors, third leading cause of death. And they're not doctors making a mistake, cutting the wrong vein or something. These are administrative errors, failed coordination, missing a diagnosis. So these are things that are very preventable. Medicare Advantage directly gets after what's ailing our society. And so in spite of all the noise, you know, it's a great thing. And quite frankly, there's a national infrastructure that's been built over 20 years of a shared distribution. So a lot of people, the little carriers don't like the big carriers and so on and so forth. So guess what? Here's foot the bill for the national infrastructure, the brokers in the communities, the other distribution channels, and that's a shared infrastructure. It's tremendously cost-effective, leverages prevention to beat cure, and it allows us to take those new innovations and distribute them because more things are possible every day. So to me, Medicare Advantage allows us to get the most amount of wellness out of each dollar available and does so in a fair way. It does so in a way that helps rural and urban, right? In fact, if you just look at the satisfaction and the number of people on Medicare Advantage, you know, we used to say at IBM, you know, people vote with their feet. Well, guess what? The feet are all beaten a path to MA, which just crossed the 50% mark recently in terms of total beneficiaries enrolled.
Then why are there so many people, at least in government and maybe in a couple of other places, shooting at those plans and trying to say that we shouldn't keep marketing those?
Well, you know, I think in my experience in the last few years, there's a lot of well-intended people who are trying to protect seniors, and they have a perception that people are profiteering, you know, on the backs of our seniors and are vulnerable. And, you know, then they've got isolated cases to justify that. And then confirmation bias, they go, aha, you know, I told you, because they find the one. But, you know, show me any industry, you know, police, nurses, doctors, school teachers. I'll show you, you show me the industry and I'll show you the bad actors. It might be higher or lower percentages. So, you know, we do need some standards. I've proposed some standards to help measure the quality of a broker, you know, in terms of retention and all that. But, you know, generally speaking, I think that people are opposed to that or they're afraid of it. And a lot of that just goes back to where they think the role of government should be versus not be, some other things. But on average, people are happier, people are getting a better value, and they say Medicare Advantage costs more. So, you know, you get more. You know, the old studies that I've seen show more than $2,000 a year in additional benefits in a Medicare Advantage program. You know, they innovated vision, hearing, dental, health plan membership, which not only allows you to be physically fit, but a lot of people are lonely. 25% of seniors live in isolation. And, they go to the mall and walk and have coffee for fellowship, right? For social connection. And so I think that the people that are against it simply don't understand it. And, you know, they want to protect seniors, but they don't have that firsthand knowledge.
We've got a couple of minutes left. I'm curious as to what you see, you know, kind of through your crystal ball. As MA evolves, what do you see as the biggest opportunities for innovation, whether it's technology or plan design or partnerships to advance senior health?
Well, I do think that the plans and the infrastructure are enduring now. So chronic plans and the whole idea that, you know, the disease attacks the entire body. Medicine is specifically organized around the parts of the body, you know, necessarily because you got to have deep expertise. So there's always an inherent rub between the coordination of the clinical and non-clinical community. And then there's always a rub between the plan benefit structure, because ultimately we can't give everybody everything all the time, or there's less to go around. So if you go to see a brain surgeon, you know, because you have a headache, then we're not really allocating resources. On the flip side though, if a plan is got too many pages, you know, you're just not going to get and unlock the benefits you need, which is the future to me is that the community-based brokers that are full service are going to rise, because carriers will see how much more profitable they are with the FMOs that support them. And then I think you're also going to see that they can connect earnings per share and star ratings to the proactive things we do in the front end. And then the carriers will start to specialize instead of being all things to all people. And it'll be very, very segmented. Just like when you go to the grocery store, there's 250 kinds of cereal and there's 10,000 different kinds of tomatoes, but everybody has one they like. And that goodness of fit is going to help people be more satisfied and healthier. And that's a good thing for our industry to evolve.
And that's a great place to end our conversation for today. Dr. Darwin Hale, founder and CEO of Advocate Health Advisors, thanks so much for sharing your expertise with our audience.
Thank you.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.